Well, I'm happy to be here today. Thanks for asking me to come and share my thoughts and hopefully get some ideas out there that will be useful in your discussions throughout the day. The first, some of these questions that Mike was going over, I have tried to answer myself. And that first one, what qualities brought you here today? Well, first of all, I'm very happy to be here at the BC TF, any kind of BCTF function. I'm a longtime union activist myself and was a longtime member of the American Federation of Teachers, and it's nice to be in a union environment and feel the solidarity. So that's one thing for me that's really important. But the other, and maybe more central to our discussions today, is that I really believe that schools are centripetally positioned in society. In fact, one of the last institutions that really cuts across every class level, every identity marker in our society. And so the future, I think, really seriously hinges on what we do within schools. And teaching and learning conditions then, I think, become key factors in what our future holds for us. And trying to answer the question, what counts as an educated person, that's like, I guess that's all of philosophy, has spent its time looking at that question one way or the other. And what I want to do briefly just to start out is kind of throw out some big frameworks that you might use to answer that question and that people do use, knowing that most of us who are concerned with making practical decisions in a classroom construct some kind of eclectic framework. But we have proclivities one way or another. I know that in my experience in teaching social studies, that there were certain kinds of goals that I had in mind at the secondary level, teaching grades 8 through 12. But I also worked for 5 years in a daycare center as a preschool teacher. And my proclivities there were quite different from when I was teaching high school social studies. I was informed by different kinds of interests. And that makes sense, because that's the practical judgment that you use in the context that you're working in. But I just wanted to throw out some big things. One of the most common ideas is this notion of the students should know and be familiar with the best of human achievement. And that goes by lots of different names, like rational humanism or academic rationalism, and it gets played out in curriculum proposals like studying the great books and the great ideas. And that's a very strong ideology, really, that exists when many people try to answer that question. A second one would be thinking about problem solving or cognitive processes, or the notion of cognitive pluralism. How do we teach kids in classrooms how to learn? Learning how to learn. And that is, I know when I was a daycare teacher, a preschool teacher, that focusing on cognitive processes was really much more important to me than content was when I was a secondary social studies teacher, for example. And then maybe a third one would be knowing oneself. How do we create experiences in schools where students can see the relevance of what we're doing personally? Child-centered progressivism is one model that you're probably familiar with that. A fourth would be the notion of preparing students for an adult life. What are the social, economic, career, and vocational successes that we want to prepare students for? Some people have called that a model of social adaptation. Now, in each one of these frameworks, and you could spin out many more, I would argue that there's a couple of key questions that people answer before they answer the question about what counts as an educated person. And that is, what do we value most? And what kind of life do we want to have? What kind of society do we want to have? At root, in answering that question of what counts as an educated person, I think those questions about values and the kinds of society that we're trying to pursue are really at the root of our answers. And what I want to propose in terms of, I felt like I had to give my personal response to this question, or at least some version of it. And I think that an educated person is someone who can create personally meaningful understandings about the world. I've only got 15 minutes. I'm used to teaching in 3-hour time blocks now, so you're going to have to, and my dad's a minister too, so. Although I'm not going to take up a collection, I promise. An educated person is somebody who has the ability to create personally meaningful understandings. And I think that works whether you're teaching primary grades or whether you're teaching at the middle school grades or whether you're teaching at high school or university. There's another factor, though, that I think is important to go with that. Not just creating meaningful understandings of the world, but understanding how, as a person, as a human being, you can have agency within your world and that you can act on that world to produce effects. Now, I think that kind of definition allows for, as Jenny pointed out, ideas about what an educated person looks like to be quite varied, but at the same time, to have a center that holds. And so the question becomes then, and I guess this is really the focus of the second part of the day, what kind of teaching and curriculum can produce such a person? And that's hard to answer. But I think there's some starting points that are really key. And the first is that teachers themselves have to be in a position, have to work in conditions where they are allowed to create personally meaningful understandings of their world and what their work is, and where they have agency to act on those understandings. In fact, I think teachers have to have working conditions that allow them to exercise professional judgment. That if teachers don't have that, then we can't expect that the students coming out of those classrooms are going to be educated persons in that same sense. And what that does is it sets up a couple of key issues to look at. And first of all, I don't think that we can create an educated person by merely transmitting a curriculum that's been conceived by someone else. And you all know every good teacher brings their own practical knowledge to the classroom. But when we start to talk about what teaching is, as particularly in the political context that we're in today, we have to put that up front, that teachers have to be able to exercise professional judgment. We can't expect educated persons to be produced by teachers merely transmitting a curriculum that's conceived outside of their own classrooms. And that means that in terms of conditions of teaching and learning, teachers have to be able to rely on their own personal experiences. They have to be able to exercise, bring to bear the practical knowledge that they have about teaching and learning, and the pedagogical content knowledge that they have in creating their own ideals about curriculum that are suited to the learners and to the context that they're teaching in. Now, historically, there's always been a split between teaching and curriculum, so I'm glad that this discussion brings these two things together. And since I'm a social studies teacher, this is the social studies part of the program. If you look at what happened in the Industrial Revolution in the late 19th, early 20th centuries, and the application of scientific management to industry, what you see in a nutshell is basically management trying to extract craft knowledge from workers and then divide it up into little portions so that it can be redistributed and controlled by management. And that same process is in work today with in schools. You know this. And it's an issue that needs to be resisted. We can't allow the conception of work, our work as educators, to be separated from the execution or the implementation of that work. In fact, I think, based on the arguments that I would make about what constitutes an educated person, that to allow that condition to exist is to undermine what an educated person is. So we have now that situation, and I know Alfie Cohn was here a few weeks ago, and would anybody see Alfie when he was here last, or you've seen him before? I know he's been here a number of times just since I moved to BC in 2004. And he's from Massachusetts. I used to live in Albany, New York, only about 4 hours from him. And so we've crossed paths many times. And his critique of the tougher standards movement and high-stakes testing, I think, is really an important issue to think about. Because what we have now, often, is the idea of an educated person is an image. We have this image of an educated person as someone who can get certain kinds of test scores. That's the bottom line. But we have to separate out that image that would allow someone to make a judgment about who's an educated person based on a test score, or is, I talk with people about, my son goes to school on the east side of Vancouver and public schools, and you know, when we came here, we would ask people, well, where are the good schools? What do you think about this school? What do you think about that school? And people are oftentimes really willing to provide their judgments about what counts as a good school or a poor school. And then if you follow up with a second question, you say, have you been in that school? I mean, do you know people in that school? And, you know, many times, well, no. I've never even been inside that school. Why? How do you know that that's a good school then? How do you know that that's a poor school then? And it's based on image. And the image that's produced through the test scores that are in rankings in the paper or whatever is very powerful. So what we have to do, I think, when we talk about what is an educated person and our role as educators is we can't allow these images to control the day. And I don't have a good word for this, but I like the idea of the authentically educated person, which would be someone who could be educated, but maybe we could consider as educated, able to construct meaningful understandings of the world and to act on it, but may not be scoring at the highest levels on the FSA or the provincial exams. So these Tayloristic principles, the scientific management principles, are really in play today. And we have to resist them. And there are two concepts briefly. Now, I don't know how I'm doing on time, but they're just two basic concepts I think are important.
I don't know
important.
How we're doing on time. Because
I never look.
Concepts,
I never look. Two. I only got 2 points. Of course, my dad always had sub-points, which really extended things. I was always glad when he said, I've only got 3 points today, but man, he's like A, B, C, D, E, and what I want to do is talk about these 2 points, curriculum potential and curriculum wisdom. Okay, and the first one is the curriculum potential is the idea of seeing possibilities where others see none. And I think that's really what skilled and experienced and effective teachers are able to do. You might be given a curriculum by the government. You might have a test that surveils you and your students and what you do. But what can you do? What can we do together to see the potential within that curriculum and to make it something otherwise? That is, what I'm talking about is actively and intentionally uncovering multiple purposes, multiple uses of the materials that we have that connect up with students and contexts that are very particularistic, not universalistic. You know, you don't have to go from the north of the province to the lower mainland. You don't even have to go from east side to west side of Vancouver. As Jenny said, in any one classroom, there are so many multiple needs that are there. How do we take the curriculum materials and not expect the universal application across students as if they were all the same? But where can we find the potential for multiple uses? So there are a couple of, these are the sub-points I mentioned. So there are a couple of elements here. One is, what kind of materials do we have to work with? But I think more important for today is the idea of thinking about teachers' interpretive abilities and their professional imagination. That is really, for me, the key issue in terms of, you know, thinking about teaching and curriculum for producing educated persons. Looking at the source of teachers' professional imaginations and their interpretive abilities, their ability to change and transform materials and experiences and devise new alternatives from them. That, to me, is a key factor in producing an educated person. Related to that is the notion of curriculum wisdom. And here, by curriculum wisdom, and I'm borrowing this concept from a couple of colleagues of mine in the States, Kathleen Kesson and James Henderson. And they talk about decision-making aimed at teachers and students creating a learning environment that embodies the good life. Now, this goes back to our definitions of what counts as an educated person. The values that we have, the values that we hold in priority, our images and desires about producing a good life or creating a good society. I think those are important things. The challenge then is for us as teachers and educators is to consider things like what counts as good conduct, what counts as enduring values, and what are the implications and consequences of our decisions relative to those things. How can we think about educational means and ends? How can we engage in sophisticated, practical reasoning? I'm not talking about taking theories or ideas that exist outside of the classroom and just bringing them in to apply, but how do we construct wisdom, classroom wisdom as teachers? How do we exercise practical judgment, professional judgment in our classroom? So curriculum wisdom is really oriented decision-making is oriented to focusing on envisioning a democratic good life and then enacting those significant visions. And I don't think that there's any one of us that has the vision that can be standardized to count for a democratic good life. That in fact, the question is not a destination, it's a journey. It's the idea that in considering that question, we have to constantly look at the context that we're working with. Who are the kids in our classroom? What's our own background? What are we good at? What can we do that is, where are our talents as teachers that might be different from the teacher across the hall? And if we're able to create teaching conditions for teachers that allow teachers to pursue that kind of professionalism, then I don't think we have to worry about the learning opportunities that are provided for our students, because it will model exactly what an educated person is. And for students to be able to spend 12 years in close contact with a person who's able to focus on envisioning and enacting that vision, the modeling there is, that's the pedagogical strategy that is going to create the educated person. And the educated person's going to look very different. It's not going to be a standardized idea. It's not going to be someone with a particular kind of credential or someone that's gotten a particular kind of test score. So I hope you find that useful in terms of the discussions that are going to happen the rest of the day. Thanks.